Hello and welcome to another episode of It Was Mooney, your source for all things movie streaming and pop culture related. I'm your host Kosi, and I'm joined once again by Wani B, and we're joined again in studio again by our good friend Eric. What's up, brother?
What's up, man? Good to be here.
Welcome back, dude.
Thank you.
Good to see you, man.
Yeah, it's good to see you guys,
dude. And honestly, like you kind of sort of just called us to have this episode because you had some stuff you wanted to get off your chest about James Bond.
Well, it's the whole I've been wanting to do a James Bond episode for a while, but now yes. It's actually kind of relevant.
Yeah, man. Yes.
Yes. Big news recently: MGM and what's her face, Barbara Broccoli.
Yep, the broccoli.
Of the broccoli food name.
Yep. No, like.
They claim to be responsible for the actual broccoli.
They invented food. Broccoli? Okay. Cool.
Yes, they claim to be responsible for both. No, so with the news, we thought we'd do a little bit of a retrospective, go over the different James Bond eras. Eric is a connoisseur in all things James Bond.
Most definitely.
We'll go over each of the eras. We'll talk about, give her some more thoughts on them. Follow up with our favorite parodies, satires.
There are a lot of them.
References in pop culture and media. And finish off with just a talk about what were some of our favorite moments, movies, some of our least favorite moments, and who we think should be James Bond going forward as Amazon takes us into the Bond expanded universe.
Yeah, because they dropped, what was his name?
Aaron Taylor Johnson.
That's right. Yeah, they dropped him as Bond.
Yes, yeah. He's no longer Bond, which is a shame because he looked like he'd be set for the role.
I wasn't against it, but I really do think it. I think Craven is what killed it. I think folks saw him.
That
Craven,
was why they.
And they were like, you know what?
That played a huge part.
let's maybe not.
Craven
do this.
Flopped.
That's not his fault. That's not his fault.
It really isn't, but I think that's how, like, you know, how the internet goes, and you know, people, and I think they saw, like, oh, maybe they got cold feet.
But
at
I
the
wanted
end.
Someone to be mad at Juan.
Right, exactly. Who can we be mad at?
Who can I yell at?
If not Craven, so
angry noises.
No, but we're gonna get into that. But seriously, Bond is like what, 70-80 year old property? I think it's close to that, right?
Yeah,
like,
it's was books before, but the
Ian
the first,
Fleming.
Yeah, the first movie, Dr. No, was kicked off in '62,
which is a fantastic.
Yeah,
freaking
he
movie
was.
Too.
Connery was in.
Was Connery the first Bond?
Yes, he was. He was in five in a row, and then they had someone else step in, George Lazenby.
George Lazenby.
So he had Dr. No, From Russia With Love, Goldfinger, Thunderball, You Only Live Twice, and those were his five in a row. A lot of pop culture is from a bunch of those first five movies.
I think
what you would see.
I think when people think of Bond, they think of
yeah.
Sean
Did he
Connery.
Have the funny accent back then? The very Sean Connery.
Oh
accent.
Yeah, man. Like, he kind of made it. What I mean, it was classic spy. Watching it now today, it's pretty goofy. Like some of the gadgets he has, but I mean, it was the '60s. So
it's classic. I think all the classic tropes we think of came from his era.
Yeah,
Bond. Like I believe even Goldfinger had we had Odd Job and stuff like that. And
Goldfinger,
we had,
you
that
had,
where Odd Job came from.
Yeah. Goldfinger, you have the device where he's in a he's lying on the table and the laser is going up his legs. That was in Gold. That's in everywhere.
No,
Mr.
Bond.
I've seen that off of Simpsons and.
No, Mr. Bond, I expect you to die. Like, great one-liners from his villains. Like, he had a great rogues gallery of villains.
Yeah, set the precedent back then of what spy movies should be. I mean, there were other spy movies going on, but this kind of really hit the box office, and people ate this up back then.
Yeah, I think so my favorite, I think in there is a bunch of favorites of mine. I know there was a Goldfinger, Thunderball From Russia With Love, Dr. No, then.
I feel like you just named
I think the highest rated one on the internet last time I looked was Russia. I think that one is what critics say is like the best one. I really enjoyed Goldfinger and Thunderball.
Those ones are great.
Those are great.
Yeah.
Classics.
So what was that era like? Like, let's compare it. Let's go over each of them.
It was very much a spy movie. It had its action, but it was very much spy oriented.
Was most of the tropes that you see in James Bond movies like the corny, over the top villain.
Oh yeah, yeah, because it kind of set the theme of suave, sexy spy, always gets girl, cool gadgets, mm-hmm. has a home base. It set that whole template up for what people kind of look at when they see like a classic throwback spy movie. I mean, look at Austin Powers. It was kind of like,
that was just a straight ripoff, right?
Well, yeah, but I mean, it's still,
yeah,
still has all the tropes.
And I think also with that movie, especially with Dr. No, it established the whole Bond and his villains. Like, yeah, throughout Bond's whole history, he's only as good, not as good, but his rogues gallery again has been something that has made him just such an endearing character. And Dr. No was an original Bond villain of his. Mm-hmm. And I think that established this whole, he's holding that cat and petting it, that whole trope, like that's where it came from. That's how we get like Dr. Blofeld. Evil. Yeah, Blofeld, yeah. So like I love how this era established kind of almost a visual motif for how they're gonna do these movies, or and a sort of reference point,
yeah,
moving forward is what
and this era established. And that's kind of what people were looking forward to as the movies went on. What cool gadgets would he have next? What awesome villain is gonna be his counterpart? And I think a lot of people were looking forward to like who was singing the songs.
Oh yeah.
Back then, I mean, it was rewatching them. A lot of them are just silhouettes of naked women like jumping on trampolines and flying through the air and shit. But now it's almost like an art.
Yeah,
like,
the opening
like, scene, the opening sequence is almost like a fucking art piece now.
Because I know with not to get too much ahead, but something like A Diamond Forever or even a Goldfinger, they had great soundtracks. So Shirley Bassey sang one of those, and then you kind of fast forward years later to 2012 with Adele, and she's singing for Skyfall. And like it's how they kind of established again in this era that we're speaking of, we're gonna get, you know, the best singer. We're gonna get a singer that
yeah,
loves
yeah,
to it's sing a, this.
It's like an honor to be singing in a Bond movie. Exactly. Now. You know, it's reached that acclaim.
Yeah, and this era established that as well.
And I don't know if people were winning Emmys off of these songs back then. I mean, they definitely are now. Yeah. But I don't know if these were like Emmy nominated songs back in the 60s and 70s when these movies were
fine. Nobody cares about the Emmys.
Take that, Emmy. Yes.
Or not Emmy, but Grammy.
Yeah.
Whatever, y'all know what I mean.
The random award that's not an Oscar.
Yeah. So Connery was in there in 62, his last movie sequentially was in 67, and then they get this guy George Lazenby. I don't really know how to pronounce it still, but it's he was in on Her Majesty's Secret Service. It was a movie that people can take or leave.
Yeah, I always I think of him as the forgotten Bond. Yeah.
Well, he had like a 6-7 movie deal. But he left because he wanted to pursue more acting roles.
Oh, okay. No, like actual
roles.
Yeah, actual that weren't James Bond. No, I don't think I've watched that movie again since I watched it in 2015 when I got the box set. But yeah, I just thought of On a Magic Secret Service. It wasn't a bad movie, but
it wasn't a bad movie.
Very forgettable.
But it's very
And George, I hate saying it, but like he was forgettable in the role. He didn't really establish himself.
When you're put up against people who have multi movie deals, or not deals, but who are in multiple movies of this Bond series, it's unless you're watching that movie over and over and over again. You know,
it's kind of funny going from George Lazenby, so much so that to go right back to Sean Connery.
Yeah, they got Sean Connery for God, what was his Diamonds Are Forever,
which is my favorite one of the series. I love that one.
I think Lazenby also thought, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I saw this on like the internet a couple times, that he thought that the tuxedo image spy wouldn't last throughout the 70s. And then you look at Roger Moore, who just blew it out of the park.
Yeah, someone like Roger Moore coming up.
I mean, his movies were so fun, man.
I think sometimes maybe Lazenby didn't fully, like buy into just what character was all about and whatnot. I think some people kind of hurl that at him. I don't think it's really fair to say that. I think he played the part that he was given.
Mm-hmm.
The movie didn't do so well. Again, and they have to kind of just go back and change course by going back to Sean Connery.
Exactly. I mean, hey, in my heart, he's a Bond.
Yeah, you know, of course.
He was in a movie, man. Yes. He was in a movie, man.
Yeah, shouts out to George Lazenby.
Got his role.
Yeah.
So, speaking of Timothy Dalton, let's go into that, or what, the Roger Moore.
Roger Moore.
Let's go into Roger Moore.
Yeah, Roger Moore had his first movie in 73, Live and Let Die, and that's actually the only Bond movie that has supernatural elements.
Voodoo.
Yeah.
Heavy voodoo.
It's the only Bond movie that has that in it, like magic and shit.
And again, in the whole history of having great people on there, they had
the villains in the Moore era Jaws. Remember him?
Yeah.
The guy with the metal teeth.
No, and the whole trope of James Bond going to like a tropical place and like a beautiful setting, having to compete with spies in the area.
Yeah,
it's what, again, it's this era established more of the espionage, because like Roger Moore was like this dapper, debonair guy, but they sent him to go undercover sometimes or go into really seedy parts, and Live and Let Die established that, hey, Bond can get dirty and get down, and he gets into some stuff.
Yeah, this was a good era because it introduced a lot of other classic Bond. Like pop culture, like he was the first Bond with the white tuxedo.
Yes,
okay. That's a classic look.
Well, I believe Sean Connery also had it in Dr. No, in that famous Bond, James Bond. You mean the tuxedo with the bow tie with the red? You mean that one, or Tom?
No, where it's just like all white with like the black accents.
Oh, okay.
And then,
okay,
black pants.
I got you.
It was just a very bell bottoms, you know, just a very 70s Roger Moore look. Yeah. He was also the oldest Bond. He was in like his 50s.
Hmm. Okay.
But his movies were great because at that point, I feel like Bond really cemented itself, and they were big budget. I mean, they had like... Okay. Do you guys remember that Simpsons episode with Hank Scorpio?
Yep.
Where he just has like hundreds of minions that are being destroyed
that's Moonraker.
That's a spinoff of the Roger Moore series. Yeah. Like he just hundreds of henchmen, huge things, huge sets exploding.
And I think that's where, you know, it kind of, in this era of Bond with Roger Moore, it kind of, you can see a bit of the excess in how the filmmaking, and how they said, okay, let's go bigger. How can we go more bombastic with it? And with Moonraker, they straight up went to the moon. Like they took it to the moon with a space laser. So
it was cool because they kind of did kind of. So it was Live and Let Die, which was great. Man with a Golden Gun. Everybody,
awesome.
Yeah,
awesome
that
movie.
That was a great movie. And then putting into The Spy Who Loved Me.
Yes.
Which, I mean, one of the Austin Powers movies is named The Spy Who Shagged Me. It's literally a ripoff on that title.
Yeah.
And then they just go to the moon after that.
Yep. And in 79, they're like, kind of like almost fat. They pulled a Fast and Furious.
They
it kind of felt like
that. In Austin Powers.
Yeah, that's where they got that. Yep. This era introduced that whole a Bond villain going to space with a laser to do nefarious things like that.
Yeah. No, I feel like Austin Powers was more ripped off of Roger Moore just because he was the 70s Bond.
Yeah, he's the one that a lot of people grew up watching and identified with.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's Roger Moore era. What are we following up with?
So Roger Moore went into 83 with his last movie, Octopussy.
And great name, by the way.
There was a non-Eon Productions movie that they got Sean Connery to come back in.
Yes.
He's old as fuck.
Yeah.
It's called Never Say Never Again.
Directed by Irvin Kershner, who directed the Empire Strikes Back.
So, oh, really?
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. That movie is just a worse Thunderball.
Oh.
And I recommend not, skip it. It's not, you won't find that movie in any of the box sets anyways.
It's not, Sean Connery's in it, and it's really cool that, like, yeah, he came back to do this, but and they have a really great, they had a great team behind it. It's Irvin Kershner, Lorenzo Semple Jr., he also wrote the screenplay for Batman 66, did for also Flash Gordon, so it's a pretty great team of guys coming together, but didn't really make for a great movie.
Yeah, that was in 83. And then I missed one, 85, View to a Kill. That had Christopher Walken.
Yep.
As the bad guy. Where he just looked high as fuck the entire
movie.
Is
that also Sean Connery?
No, that's Roger Moore. That was his last movie.
Yeah, Christopher Walken and Grace Jones. Grace Jones is scary,
man. That was
and
her name.
Sexy.
Yeah, she was awesome. Terrifying.
She was awesome.
She was terrifying.
Yeah.
That was a fun last movie to close out that era.
I want to say also, just in terms of how these eras established themselves. Even starting with Sean Connery, he had always a really cool femme fatale roster. So Bambi and Thumber is a one that comes to mind for me in Diamonds Are Forever. But Grace Jones's character in A View to Kill was one where she was able to really, she was already an icon in the 80s for just for fashion, avant-garde stuff. But she was able to really flex just her acting muscle and just really be a really scary femme fatale villain in there. And I believe she set the blueprint for what we saw in stuff like in to go ahead in GoldenEye with Famke Janssen's character and whatnot. So again, this era, this Roger Moore era, established these femme fatale bad guys in there.
Mm-hmm. And now we hit the Timothy Dalton era.
Now we get
Timmy Dalton. Man, he looks like Bond to me. He's only in two movies, which sucked because of licensing issues. But he looked the most like Bond.
Wait, it was licensing? That's
yeah. They had trouble. He kind of brought action to Bond movies. Okay. His two movies, In Living Daylights and License to Kill, a lot of people like License to Kill more just because that's more action than spy. But man, I love me some Timmy Dalton, dude.
Timmy Dalton.
I love
great.
Me some Timmy Dalton. You like him as a bad guy.
In Hot Fuzz. He was fantastic in Hot Fuzz.
Who did he play in Hot Fuzz?
He was the mayor or the police chief?
Oh yeah, the police chief. Yeah
yes, he's the police chief.
It was the evil police chief who was in charge.
He was great
of all the villainy, and he was a fantastic Bond villain, right? I mean, that's not really a Bond movie, but he knew what role he meant to be playing, right?
You felt he was playing into the fact that, all right, guys, you know I was Bond. I get it. Let me sink my teeth into this other role of being a really bad guy. And love him in Hot Fuzz.
He's a bad guy in one of the Yellowstone prequels, too. I forgot which one.
Yeah, you're talking about that. Yeah.
1923.
He's a guy who's trying to buy Harrison Ford's land. He don't care if Ford is there to take it back.
I want it.
But Landman!
Timothy Dalton is a theatrical presence. He's an exaggerated presence on the screen, but I love that for him.
Dude, every time he hits the screen, I get a serotonin boost. Just like Pierce Brosnan.
Yeah, Timothy Dalton, he was even, no matter what he's in, he was even in Flash Gordon in a small bit role. and he was amazing in that. So, yeah, I love Timothy Dalton.
Yeah, man.
You can tell he was a big-time theater kid when he was young.
Yes. He's a classically trained actor. He's on stage, and he was able to take that to James Bond. Again, I think a way that he was able to differentiate himself in the two movies was his approach to, he took it seriously in terms of just the action, but then just the portrayal of James Bond. I remember that just in License to Kill in particular. Yes, it's an action movie, but again, Timothy Dalton just brought this, almost this grittiness that you saw later with a Daniel Craig.
Was that the first time Bond goes rogue in a movie with License to Kill?
It felt R-rated. Like, yeah,
he was like cut off from everything.
It felt like almost like a precursor to what we saw with in Daniel Craig, or even with Pierce Brosnan a little bit, because GoldenEye was
unlike
a
Ethan
bit.
Hunt, who goes rogue like every fucking
every
single
movie.
Every single movie, he's going rogue for another reason,
and then they thank him for it.
Yeah. His last movie was 89. Brosnan kicks it off in 95. So they had a big gap. But I would have liked to see Timmy Dalton go into the 90s. Man.
He could have had a good 4 or 5 movie run in the 90s.
I think he could have made GoldenEye equal or better. He wouldn't have made it worse.
See, I don't know. I think Pierce was.
Pierce is one of my favorite people of all time, and I love Pierce Brosnan.
He was so perfect, and
he was
so perfect in what they're trying to do with Bond in '95. So I don't know.
I mean, that GoldenEye is probably the movie that, I mean, everyone from our generation knows the game.
Yeah, obviously the game
from N64.
Yeah,
the game was huge. At one point, you know, there's a strong case to be made that it was the most popular console video game multiplayer-wise.
That's not even a crazy take. Yeah, definite argument.
There was Mario Kart and Super Smash.
Super Smash Melee,
and the biggest games multiplayer-wise were probably on PC. Quake.
I think
Unreal Tournament and Quake Tournament went hard.
Unreal Tournament and Quake were the Counter-Strike started coming around.
Okay.
Early 2000s. I want to say 2001.
Yeah, because that was a mod off of Half-Life.
Yes.
So just early Quake. 2000s makes
and
sense.
And Quake was a mod of Doom.
Yeah.
I'm sorry,
yeah.
We don't say mod, we might mod of...
A modification. It's okay. They took the base game,
okay,
the models, the assets. The assets of the game.
Like so the skin and what all it looked like.
Like the, okay, so like a monster is in there, right? So the game puts it in for you to shoot. Well, the Quake or Counter-Strike takes the people you're shooting the monsters with and has you play as them against each other.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right? So it'd be, in Doom, you're just shooting demons. In Quake, you're shooting other Doom Slayers.
Doom guys.
Yeah, exactly.
Doom, okay. Doom guys. Okay.
Yeah, it's a bunch of Doom guys shooting at each other.
Yeah, okay. So early 2000s for Counter-Strike makes sense. Yeah.
Cool. Yes.
Yeah.
So, but GoldenEye was what, 99, I want to say?
GoldenEye was 95.
95.
No, not the game.
Oh, the game. The game.
I want to say the game was 99. 90,
90, that was 98.
Like, it might be 98. You might be correct. One of those two. I think it is 98. You are correct.
But it was huge. I remember.
No, it was. It was
at the time.
It was the biggest game back then, man. Dude, yeah.
Cousin Chris's older brother was so good at GoldenEye that I remember crying because it's like, I'm not going to play anymore.
Cause also, everybody had the rule. You can't play Oddjob because he cheated.
Because he used Oddjob.
Yeah,
He was cheating.
That and, and if you found where the golden gun was in any of the maps, you can't pick it up because that was a cheap gun.
That game was just an insta-kill.
It
was a golden deagle.
Immediately.
In a game where you could just no recoil.
Which, man with the golden gun in the Roger Moore movies was actually played by Christopher Lee.
Oh,
Count Dooku!
Pretty cool. Oh, Count Dooku.
So, okay.
Count Dooku, baby. So, Saruman. Mm-hmm.
So 97 was
he was a top world assassin.
Yeah,
that's crazy.
Yeah, man, and it was so. GoldenEye and the Pierce Brosnan era is what we grew up with as kids. That was the ones that I saw in theaters.
I remember that opening scene.
That one, World Is Not Enough. Oh man,
where he dives off the fucking.
Is World Not Enough the one with Monica Bellucci?
I believe
she in there.
No, she's in Daniel Craig one. That's Spectre, I believe.
Okay.
Monica Bellucci. Yeah, that's later on.
Okay. But yeah, no. The World Is Not Enough. There was a couple ones. What were they?
It was The World Is Not Enough, Die Another Day, Tomorrow Never Dies. He was only in 4. And those were... So, I mean, you guys remember, like, the 90s and early 2000s, just sex was everywhere. Everything was sexy. Like, even comic book characters had bulging muscles. Like, bigger muscles than they needed everywhere.
It was sexy, but also kind of like how in the Roger Moore ones, they went bigger and more bombastic. In something like The World Is Not Enough and Tomorrow Never Dies, you have Pierce Brosnan on a green screen just, you know, gliding down whatever is behind him on the green screen. Granted, they've had that before, but this is Pierce Brosnan coming off of stuff like GoldenEye.
This was
they're
the
kind of reverting almost.
Late 90s when this stuff was... CGI was really becoming a big deal.
Yeah.
Green screen was really becoming a big deal. So people were just excited to try this shit out.
Yeah.
There was a... One thing I want to point out about this era is that... I mean, I'm sure he was before too, but he... The suaveness of James Bond was off the charts. Oh,
Brosnan was good.
He had incredible riz,
Brosnan. Brosnan's a hot... he's an attractive dude.
Of course.
Brosnan's an attractive dude.
You almost don't believe he'd be a super spy because he's
too
damn handsome.
He stood out too much. You know what I mean? He stood out too much. It's like... This guy wearing a suit, this handsome. Okay, he can't just be a normal dude.
But it's very true.
He has to be a model. He has to be. You know what I mean? It's like when Hitman would try to convince you that super secret agent Hitman that could infiltrate anywhere in the world were bald dudes wearing tuxedos with a barcode on the back of their head
with the same red tie.
Everybody knows who that guy is.
You
don't even have to stop and think about it. Oh my god, there's a guy showing up with a barcode, officer. Yes, I absolutely remember a strange guy coming up with a fucking barcode that's not from around here. I would know if there was a bald guy with a barcode living next to me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think, but what I appreciated about Pierce was I think he almost knew he was the pretty boy, but he still, again, was going crazy. Like, his action scenes always had a sense of he's trying to fight back from being on, like, a part below. Because a lot of the times, James Bond is always beating up the bad guys.
He's punching upward.
Yeah, but in these ones, but what Martin Campbell established in GoldenEye was, no, this James Bond doesn't always come out, like, okay, and he has to kind of work for his kill.
But, man, he would do suave shit. Like, there was a part where his car turned into an underwater boat.
Oh, my God,
And he was holding his breath underwater, and Pierce took it up upon himself to fix his tie and then start driving. So it's just, it's just, man, he was just so cool.
He was in on it. He knew, hey, I'm Bond. He famously played, he played Remington Steele on a TV show. It's basically a Bond-esque character. So he understood that, okay, I'm in this iconic role. Let me have some fun with this. So
I heard that. I heard that when he went to casting, they were like, "Shut everything down," and it's him.
Yeah,
it's
Remington Steele.
Let's talk about the second big role from the Pierce Brosnan movies, Dame Judi Dench.
Oh man, this is where we got M. This is where we got M.
Is that the first time we got M?
Yes, and GoldenEye. Yeah, yeah.
No, it was honestly one of our big roles. I might be your biggest role, right? And it's
this is the Sound of Music chick, right?
No, that's Judy Andrews. That's Julie Andrews.
Okay.
Yeah.
She did other British shit. I can't think of anything off the top of my head. You know, she's the kind of person that would show up in The Crown. Mm-hmm. Like, right? She was fantastic as this kind of...
She was a bitch, but she was good at it.
Agency leader, always kind of harsh on Bond. The Brosnan movies were a bit more campy, right? They had some good action. Oh, yeah. They were very over the top.
I mean, dude, even their villains. You remember Diamond Face?
Diamond Face.
Just the guy who had diamonds blast into his face. There was the dude who couldn't feel pain.
Yep.
It was the same bullets.
That was going closer and closer to his brain, so he was going to die at some point.
But I think in the midst of all the wackiness, Judi Dench, going back to her character, she's what grounded Pierce Brosnan.
Yep.
And again, she's what went on to ground Daniel Craig in his movies. Yep. She was like, okay.
It's good that they had something consistent as an anchor for the Daniel Craig movies.
Yeah.
I do want to shout out that Sean Bean does have a death.
Sean Bond.
In the Pierce Brosnans as 006 Trevelyan.
It's a great death.
He's one of his many deaths, but this is one of them. And it's one of my favorite of his.
It's hilarious death.
Falling from that satellite.
His life goes backwards, dude.
It's crazy.
He's always born to die.
Sean Bond.
Going into the Daniel Craig movies, that really kind of cemented a continual open, like, story beginning and end. You know, there is a clear, and I say beginning because Casino Royale from Ian Fleming is supposed to be Bond's first mission.
Okay.
So it kind of starts.
Well, it felt like a little bit of a reboot.
Almost like a Batman Begins a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. Pretty much.
Because the Brosnan movies ended with Die Another Day, which, you know, turned to campiness and high-ass ritual.
Yeah, like.
All the way up.
cheesy one-liners.
Didn't they have the freaking invisible car?
Yes, they did.
Yeah. They had a car that he drove with the same dongle that you unlock it with. It was crazy, man.
Yeah, just goofy. I think it was John Cleese who was Q.
He was great. Awesome. That's a good shout out, man. Yeah.
Yeah. Again, very, very, very kitschy, very campy. You know, at that point, Bond had been an institution. Really, if you think about it, Bond was probably the first big, what do you call it, franchise that was just milked. Kind of extended cinematic universe kind of situation.
I think whenever I look at this baton pass between the Bonds of the Pierce Brosnan and having the end of his era to Daniel Craig, it felt like the 97 Batman movie with Batman and Robin, and how after that there was a bit of a definite lull, and then we got Begins. And going into Daniel Craig, you know, I remember this as a kid. Everyone was so mad at Daniel Craig being cast. Again, he was blonde. There was this whole, even before like Facebook and all that, there's this whole campaign of not my Bond, you know, because there's this whole thing of like, he's not handsome. He's not, who's this guy? And like, almost came out of nowhere. Famously, Henry Cavill, who went on to play Superman, auditioned for it and lost out to Daniel Craig. So Daniel Craig going into Casino Royale had a lot of pressure on him because a lot of people were like doubting him hardcore.
Man, that movie was so
that good. Opener. Parkour opener. It's amazing.
I want the parkour opener.
Yep, that's Casino Royale.
That's Casino Royale.
That was the second one.
No, it was the first. Yeah.
Well, didn't the second one also have a good parkour opener in Africa?
It was a decent one. Quantum of Solace was next. Yeah.
I'm trying to remember what the opening for that scene was.
Yeah, that was the opener where the
big chase scene in Africa.
And he blew up at the end.
Yeah.
That was pretty good.
I liked the Spectre, the Mexico City.
Oh, my god,
that one was awesome.
Oh,
that was
good, too. No, but it was interesting because, one, that was the first big Bond change in the internet era.
Yep.
Going back to what Kosi was saying.
That's actually very true, yeah.
That was the first Bond, and for us, it was our first Bond change. You know, I gotta say, the marketing for that kind of stuff is excellent from their perspective. The idea that, you know, we care who the next Bond is going to be, that is like a wide topic of discussion, who's going to be cast in, you know, the most franchise of franchise movies
in all of
Hollywood history.
It was up there with who's playing Batman next, who's playing Spider-Man next. Yeah, people wanted to know.
And these were like, you know, people like Billie Eilish, Adele, they were singing in these Daniel Craig movies, like top listed.
Yeah, like later on. Yeah. But yeah, and like,
so
but
yeah, these were modern blockbusters in every sense of the word. Pretty right? much. Bond had always been a little bit of its own thing, but these were, you know, these were some of the big action movies of the
day. I was excited to go to the movie theater when I knew a Bond movie was out. Exactly. I was pumped.
But yeah, so Casino Royale, we started off, Quantum of Solace. Daniel Craig era was a lot more action-oriented.
Heavily action-oriented.
Oh, yeah.
Action-oriented, yeah. And I would say character-driven. We don't get as many of the kitschy tropes. We get some of them.
Yeah, right? We get some of them, but they're more of a modernization or instead of like a almost parody of what they were.
It seems like they learned their lesson from the Bourne movies and the Austin Power movies, where if they had just put out another hero, putting out, you know, getting goofy gadgets,
one-liners,
suave one-liners, look like he was beating up bad guys in a tuxedo while holding a martini in the other hand. It just came a certain point where that wasn't going to fly post Jason Bourne.
Yeah,
I think that's why I love the opening of Casino Royale before the parkour opening. It's when we basically see his first kill. It's that whole tense conversation with the guy. The guy thinks he has to drop him with a gun. Like, oh, I have you. Like Bond's like, oh, no, not really. That gun's not loaded. And it's that whole thing again. In about 5 minutes, we're introduced to this new Bond, and it's a really cool way they did it. You know, we still get the cool parkour chase and all that, but we also get this quiet moment of him, you know, just really being Bond. It's amazing.
Yeah. Who directed that movie?
That was Martin Campbell, the same guy that did GoldenEye. Came back to ensure the baton passed.
Daniel Craig had some good directors.
Oh yeah,
Sam Mendes.
Yeah, Sam Mendes. Yep. Yeah.
Yep. No. So yeah, the era was much more. It felt like a darker world. It was a post 9/11 world.
Yeah.
Right? So
information.
The Bond villains felt more harrowing than over the top, right? They felt again a little more real rather than Dr. Evil kind of ripoffs.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I know Dr. Evil was actually the ripoff, but
that's kind of why I liked Javier Bardem's villain, because it's kind of a callback to the old Bond villains. Like, every Bond villain had their thing. Metal teeth, short with a razor hat.
Some kind of disfigurement.
This guy had a disfigurement. Yeah, and it was cool. It was a shout out to old Bonds. Yeah. I loved it. But yeah, man, these
Mads Mikkelsen had the eye.
Yeah, Lashif, he had the blood eye.
Yeah.
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 No, it's I actually really liked them. It didn't have quite the same suaveness to it. Pierce Brosnan always felt like the more classic, like, oh, this is what I imagine Bond to be if you just told me to picture Bond, like, close my eyes and picture Bond. But the Craig movies felt very well made as action, action blockbusters.
I know one visual I remember in Casino Royale they used to establish Daniel Craig was in the parkour scene. The parkour guy was hopping through stuff and whatnot, and like they were like a construction site. He does all this cool flippy stuff, and then Daniel Craig's Bond just like runs through a wall and like just blasts through like to get to him. And I think that kind of sums up Daniel Craig's take on Bond. He's not he gets down and dirty. Like he's not afraid to get his hands dirty. Clearly he's tough, he's gruff, but there's still his suaveness is more it's more like it's subtle, it's subdued. I think it was a different kind of suaveness, but definitely more on the rougher side of how maybe James Bond would be if you actually did meet him in real life as opposed to the other iterations.
You know, all the good Bond games were in the Brosnan era too. Agent Under Fire.
Oh my gosh.
Was Agent Under Fire is amazing. Incredible.
On GameCube, right?
Yeah.
I love that game.
There was a DS Bond game that was awesome. But yeah, man, like it's I'm worried about what Amazon's going to do.
Well, I think before we even get to that one, just with how the Daniel Craig movies ended with No Time to Die, I think it's a lot of the times you see in these superhero movies, even franchise movies, they don't, you know, they really make that decision to give a character a beginning, middle, and end, and an arc, mm-hmm. a straight up arc for them. And I really respected what they did in No Time to Die, where it kind of they're even alluding to it in Skyfall. Hey, Bond, you're getting old. You're not passing your test. Mm-hmm. We're going to give you this gun to go back, but we probably shouldn't, but we need you. But it's the idea of he's aging. It's time to you know, put the hat down, as you say.
And yeah, I feel, yeah, that's why I really like the Craig movies, because it was like we saw his whole career.
Yeah.
Every other Bond, you don't really see that. It just felt like scattered missions. Mm-hmm. But this was like a... Like, we're old enough now to where, like I've seen Tyler, the Creator, his whole rapping career. Oh, yes. You know?
Which would be fascinating to see.
Yeah. Yeah. So, it's kind of like they brought that and they put it into five or six movies. And that was respect.
As Daniel Craig grew, his character of James Bond grew, and you know, it was a great way to end that character's whole arc.
So, do you guys have a favorite Bond movie? Let's do pre-Craig and then favorite. Well, before favorite Craig.
We the last kind of era I wanted to go over. Oh, not era. Really an era. Oh, but, another one. just the many Bond parodies and the many Bond inspired properties
mm-hmm. that come about. All right.
Obviously, the biggest ones, and we've mentioned them a few times. The Austin Powers trilogy.
Yeah.
Definite, right. Almost shot for shot some parts.
I mean, everything. The names, obviously, The Spy Who Shagged Me is very clearly.
The Spy Who Loved
Gold
Me.
Member. The names, stuff like Octopussy and Pussy Galore, the Austin Powers love Fat interest. Bastard,
yeah.
are clearly meant to
every,
be.
Every time I hear the Austin Powers theme song, I love it. Man.
Great. By Quincy Jones.
Quincy Jones, yeah. Baby. Great, great.
Yeah, man. Like, I love that. And it's one of those intros where it's like a whole, like, montage of, not montage, but you see, it goes through a whole thing of him dancing, and it's a whole production. It felt really old school.
It's like a whole musical. Music video, yeah.
Yeah, it felt old timey, but you'd stay and watch the opening credits.
That was so fun.
Yeah.
Now, look, the movies were hilarious in their own right, but they just sent up every Bond trope so flawlessly, right?
Yeah.
The goofy ass gadgets that were all perfectly calibrated to the mission at hand.
Right.
And of course, you know, in Bond they made him seem cool, and Austin Powers they just made him seem goofy and silly, right? Just to show you, just to like satirize on it. The fact that he still gets unbelievably hot women with no effort, even though he's an ugly 70s British dude with ugly teeth.
Really bad teeth.
He's like what an actual guy from Britain would look like in the 70s, some random actual spy, instead of just some super handsome, impossibly good-looking dude.
He's the actual guy that would be working at MI6.
Yes.
Yeah. They weren't all freaking models, right, that would have made him stand
exactly,
out.
Exactly, yeah.
You know, they go to space, they have, like, the goofy villains. Obviously, Mike Myers himself played both the villains and Austin Powers, which added to the...
Dr. Evil's so funny, man.
Dr. Evil, gold member.
Yes. Shout out to Michael Caine for playing his father.
Right. Yes.
Shout out to Seth Green for playing his son. There's so many Dr. Evil's son. Hilarious people they had in those movies.
Mini-Me.
So. Yeah,
the concept Troyer. Of Mini-Me. Yeah.
Didn't Rob Lowe play the young version of 2? Like when
I think so
man. When they went back in time,
I think so.
Rob Lowe
number 2.
They had Will Ferrell in one of the movies.
Oh man,
the guy who falls down the cliff. They were great, man.
No,
they
man, were great. The just so many good things. The music was also surprisingly good. I mean, we talked about the intro, but the Gold Member song by Beyonce was fantastic.
Oh, yeah, man, they
Beyonce
did. Yes, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No. Great actresses. Great actor. But again, it sent up the movie so badly that it became hard to go back to doing the same thing, right?
And they were coming out when they were still making Bond movies. That's the funny part.
They were coming out at the same time as the Brosnan movies. Because
International Man of Mystery came out just 2 years after GoldenEye. And so, and then Spy Who Shagged Me came out, and then World on Enough came out a year after Spy Who Shagged Me.
And I'm pretty sure they all did well at the box office, too.
They did extremely well. They were super... I mean, that was when Mike Myers was at the top of this game. Yeah. Dad and Shrek.
Oh, yeah.
I heard he wants to do a fourth one after he does this new Shrek thing.
A fourth Austin Powers?
Yeah.
Look, man.
He wants to do an Austin Powers where, kind of like Daniel Craig, he's getting old. And he can't really be a spy anymore.
That's funny.
Okay. I want to see Dr. Evil again, so I might be down for that.
I can see Hack.
Right.
A new Austin Powers and a new Rush Hour I would be looking forward to.
But yeah, so, but then, going on, touching on some other ones, the Kingsman series.
Kingsman's another
one. Obviously not much of a satire, more just a
It brings the British suaveness of an agent.
It does
It's James Bond with a different set of characters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With a different setting.
Yeah.
Right?
There was two of them, right?
Yeah.
Three, actually.
Oh, that's right.
Ralph Fiennes made a prequel.
The
King's Man.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. No, I heard that wasn't that great. Actually, the first one was mostly the one that was top of the line.
Yeah, the first one's great.
But church scene, just the concept of the suave British guy, British spy agency saving the world from over the top goofy villains with world domination plans, you know, perfect send up of Bond, but in a film more like an homage, right? Felt like more like a fun, like it wasn't trying to make fun of Bond, like it was trying to be like, okay, let's capture some of the zaniness of it, add our own twist to it.
Yeah, like I think what Matthew Vaughn did so well with that first Kingsman was it captured the funness of the Bond movies, definitely the Roger Moore and Sean Connery ones, but then it had that Timothy Dalton, I'm going to kick your ass and it's going to be really cool to watch energy to it, which it blended so well. And it even throw a little bit of Daniel Craig in there too, where it was fun, it was fast paced, it was slick, but also it had just memorable characters like Sam Jackson in his lisp. It had the lady with the sword legs.
Dude, which
was, it was amazing.
After that
amazing
movie, I could see Colin Firth as doing Bond.
Colin Firth would have been a good Bond.
Never thought
which I want to add, whatever happened to that dude?
He's around. He's okay.
I haven't seen him.
Some of these guys stop taking random projects.
Yeah.
They get set for life and they only take, you know, certain things that are fun for them. They're not trying to.
Yeah.
Colin Firth is alive.
But yeah, that movie, I was like, damn, I wouldn't mind if he was in a movie. That was pretty cool.
So those, and then we touched on it briefly, but the Bourne series.
Oh yeah,
it wasn't really a parody of Bond. It was more like an opposite answer to it. Like, okay,
Bond with no resources.
Yeah, if Bond is the effeminate, suave dude who gets the girl, and it seems to be just as focused on that on actually completing the mission, and he's going up against goofy, unbelievable villains who want world domination. Okay, no, Jason Bourne's the opposite. Gritty, realistic, grounded. The villain is, you know, spy agencies, realistic spy agencies. Mm-hmm. They're not over the top. They don't want world domination. They just want control. Doesn't have connections. Doesn't get cool tools. It's all on his own skill set. Very much about the fight scenes, the paranoia of fighting against your own government instead of fighting against some goofy villain.
Man, those first three were so good.
Yeah, as opposed to the Bond movies, what the Bourne movies did was the Bond movies were these colorful, big, sprawling movies that about the spy, about being a spy and espionage. What Bourne did was they were very, very claustrophobic, personal, dark, stark, but still it kind of scratches him itch. But it was the espionage in the 21st century and how, you know, you won't have all these tools, but you're going to have yourself and your wits and your resources, you know, having this particular set of skills that Jason Bourne had. And I think throughout those three movies, he showed that unlike of James Bond, I'm going to attack my own personal problems head on while still saving the day and making sure stuff gets done. But like you can't forget, I'm going through some stuff, and that's what I appreciated about those Bourne movies.
Yeah,
it definitely between then Austin Powers, you can definitely see the influence on the Daniel Craig movies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
right. The fight scenes, the his personality of this kind of being hurt. The Pierce Brosnan, James Bond movies made spy work seem like an awesome thing. Like, you wish you could be as cool and that's awesome as a spy as James Bond. Versus Jason Bourne and the Craig movies were like, okay, first of all, you're not bad enough to do this, but you really don't want to be.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Your life is better than these people's lives.
Yeah.
And Daniel Craig's, in his case, his Bond, remember when he got poisoned at his poker game? He had to, like, that whole harrowing scene of him trying to, being brought back to life to, you know, getting kidnapped by Lashif in that famous scene where he was tortured with and having his Johnson just hit over and over again. Mm-hmm. It's that thing where these movies are real. Here's what could happen if Bond was put into these harrowing situations. And I just loved how Craig's represented that. And then, you know, going to Jason Bourne, his movies, also you saw that throughout those three movies as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think it's worth mentioning there was a 1967 movie called Casino Royale, and it was a comedy. It was David Niven, I think, was the main James Bond, but the idea was that there's people after James Bond, but if there were multiple James Bonds, then they can't. Then they'll all be confused. There were just a bunch of famous actors and actresses who played James Bond in that movie. But I just think it's worth mentioning. It's another Bond flick, technically. Yeah. But yeah, James Bond. I hope that Amazon can.
Yeah, no. Going into the Amazon era, obviously we were supposed to have Aaron Taylor Johnson as the next Bond, as we mentioned earlier.
Yeah, I guess that fell through.
So, I mean, what are you guys looking for? Are you guys excited? Are you guys worried?
I'm a little worried. I know that Amazon's done some good stuff, but Rings of Power was so bad that it makes me worry that they're just going to have a property that everyone loves and put something out just hoping that something sticks.
For me, too, because they made some really good shows. They had Fallout, right?
Yeah, Fallout was
there. They did Fallout, they had Reacher.
Reacher, The Boys.
Invincible.
They've made quality shows, parts of it, but they've also made Wheel of Time. They made Rings of Power, as we talked about. They've had some big misses, and they just dumped a lot of money into this to get rid of the Broccoli family.
I think that's why, again, I'm cautiously optimistic, but I think that's why they dumped all that money. They believe in this property, and I think they have a plan and a pitch for what they're going to do in terms of how they're going to differentiate themselves now in this new era of Bond. Because, you know, coming off of Craig, who we had for such a long time, I think their MO needs to be
when did Craig start?
2006.
Damn, so it's been almost 20 years since we've had a new Bond.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
So yeah, so they're having to make, they're figuring out, you don't have to like reinvent the wheel here. It's James Bond. They have a whole history of stuff to choose from.
That's true.
But I believe I'm optimistic in just their, I know the take will be fresh. It'll be something that we haven't seen before.
Why do you get the idea that you know the take will be fresh?
Well, no, in terms of, I'm hopefully optimistic in terms of the take being fresh.
Who would you guys like to see?
So you need a British guy, right?
Not necessarily.
Someone who has a British accent.
Yeah.
People can fake it, but it doesn't feel like it's the same thing.
Yeah.
If you get somebody faking it. I don't know, man.
Right?
Taron Egerton, maybe.
I guess obviously coming off of Kingsman, he kind of, that was a great kind of audition.
Part
of
the problem is, what is a James Bond supposed to be at this point? Right, like it's really even more.
See,
than
that's
the actor.
Thing. They can reimagine it any way they fucking want. Now it's their property.
You're right. You're right. But I suppose more than who do you want to see, it's what do you want to see? Are we trying to see a suave actor solving the day by defeating over the top personalities? We're still trying to get a lot of the tropes with the hot Bond girl, the evil Bond villain, the. I don't know.
It's going to be hard to take a step back from the action that Craig brought.
I think what people are wanting is kind of like what they're doing with Superman and James Gunn do with Superman. They want to feel like they want to feel like a throwback to what we're used to with James Bond.
Yeah.
But also in a way, but also just telling stories that feel modern.
I mean, whatever they're doing, like Mission Impossible is doing a great job.
Kind of like that. I think they'll take kind of a page out of that.
Mission Impossible is doing a slam dunk.
Yeah, in terms of keeping it modern, but still keeping the spirit of what made it cool.
Even Mission Impossible, the writing mostly sucks. It's really just
a bunch of action. Yeah.
Stunts is what you come to see.
You're really just trying to see how Tom Cruise is going to top himself this time.
That's true.
But I think you raise a very good question. I think that's what Amazon has to ask themselves. Okay, what do we want? What is Bond?
Because, if you go into a Fast and Furious movie, you want over-the-top, silly, goofy action.
That's fair.
And you want some family as the emotional core of the movie, and that's pretty much all you want.
I don't really think people want the family stuff anymore.
Yeah, right. I mean, it's just like a meme at this point. It is a meme. Weird not to have it. I don't even know if people really want more Fast and Furious. It's a better question. If you want to, what was the other one? The one we just talked about.
Mission Impossible.
Okay, you want to see. You don't really care about the plot that much, right? You just want to see Tom Cruise doing wild, impossible
shit.
Yeah,
but like Daniel Craig made me kind of care about the plots a lot.
You're right. You're right. And I'm not saying you can't. But that's kind of my point.
Yeah.
Like, what do we want to see?
Yeah, that's fair.
Like, do we want to see something about like an over-the-top goofy villain that doesn't seem to play in the Trump era as much. Do you know what I mean? Like, politics has gotten too serious. Mm-hmm. It was easier to turn off your brain to that kind of shit back in 2006.
Yeah.
Oh, like Bush, like, yeah, Iraq war sucks, but we're like making fun of him. It's not...
Yeah, I'm in high school. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think having an over-the-top... I think almost having an over-the-top villain like we had in the Roger Moore eras, almost in a Moonraker. I think we could almost do a Moonraker-esque Bond today, because, and again, it won't be like almost like a parody of what's happening, but almost kind of commentating on it.
I could see it taking a fun direction where it takes almost a little bit of a comedy route, where it's not a full-on parody, but it's, you know, winking a little bit at you. It knows what it is.
It's fun.
Yeah.
Just like Bond can have some fun now, because Daniel Craig wasn't fun. It was, he's going through
something.
I will
say too, back in the early 2000s, especially, you know, dudes that era, a huge emphasis on being manly, liking macho, mature things, right? Video games, if you all remember from video games from that era, all of them had that like sepia brown tone.
Dark, dour.
Yeah, all these movies had this same, all the Craig movies had this kind of darker, none of them had some bright, colorful settings. But all the main action, all the main focus...
The mood was always dark.
It was like kind of this dark, dusty... if you remember Breaking Bad, a lot of these shows really focused on like this kind of grim aspect to it. Anti-hero type stuff, right? Let's get Bond tortured and have somebody swing at his balls.
Yeah.
Let's have the Bond girl die and him have actual trauma from it instead of treating it as a joke. All this stuff. You know, there was that big emphasis on realism and grit, and that's where Jason Bourne kind of put its thing. Nowadays, I don't feel like we're not that in need of that, right? There's not that necessity for like, oh, hey, we have to have this grim dark. We obviously saw Kingsman be very well received as the opposite. This colorful, bright, almost bubblegum imagery for a lot of the movie, and you still had a cool action cool action scenes. You still had a good spy storyline. So I think we can make it. I remember not outright campy, but I think maybe a more fun James Bond, a more optimistic James Bond.
Yeah, have him go back to saying one-liners. Have him go back to having goofy villains, but have it kind of toe that line of it's still a serious action movie with stakes, but it's fun to be James Bond.
Yeah,
I think that's what that's one approach I think Amazon could try to take to to differentiate it. That's all. I think that's what people are looking for.
Well, it looks like they have time because they're doing like a Moneypenny thing first.
Maybe they're talking about, that's another thing. Like, they might go into, since they put so much money onto it, are they going to try to make a Bond cinematic universe?
Probably is what they're going to try.
Because I'll tell you right now. That's like, again, we've mentioned video games a few times. It's like people who chase live service video games after Fortnite. It's like, bro, Fortnite just took that shit over. You're not Fortnite. If you try to be the MCU, the MCU is barely even managing to be the MCU at this point. You know what I mean?
Well, that's the thing. Like, you should never set out to make a universe first. Just set out to make a good movie, and then over time,
it's too appealing to just have the, oh, we're just going to create a Bond cinematic universe, and we're going to use this IP to create a bunch of random properties that people are going to watch simply because it's attached to the Bond name. And if they go that route, then I can almost guarantee they'll fail and just tarnish whatever's left.
I mean, that DC came out with Pennyworth following Alfred, and that show wasn't bad.
I think, it just depends.
Pennyworth was pretty cool.
Yeah, it depends on what the plan is at the end of the day. Like, yes, they can announce they're going to do the universe, but again, it depends on what that plan is and what goes into it. Mm-hmm. But you're right. We've seen too many times people just put the universe before, or cart before the horse, and it does not come out
well. Each of the Bond story, again, you can't do an MCU style where each of them perfectly leads them to the other.
Yeah.
Bond's always worked a little bit better as this kind of, oh, here's the new mission, right, where you can kind of watch them as standalones.
Yeah, I think the Daniel Craig were the first ones to actually have a kind of through-line
story. They have some through-line, but even then it was mostly like between the again, there was through lines, but you can watch Skyfall without watching Quantum of Solace.
Well, what I mean by is, like, they're in terms of just telling almost a story from this first one.
I also mean, like, you know, again, Skyfall,
you can watch them
pretty independently.
They all existed separately from whatever
Quantum of Solace story. Did feel like a direct sequel to Casino Royale.
Yeah.
But again, most of the good Bond movies have just been, okay, here's this new setting for him to be in.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, oh, hey, remember this other thing from the previous movie that's a major plot point now? No, that was a whole other movie, bro. It's his own self-contained
thing. Sometimes a whole other actor that you're talking to. So it's like, yeah, exactly. You're right. Yeah.
One thing that I feel like all the Bond movies have done really well over time is there's this term I have called Bonditis, where it's like when you take the main character and you just put him in a bunch of different, like, lavish cities and just scene change. Like, he's like in China and then he's in South Africa. I feel like all those movies did that really, really well.
Yep.
Yes.
Yep.
So that, you know, things like that you can take from every movie and be like, this is something that they should be adding to Amazon. But yeah, no, I just hope that they can, like, their first Bond movie, I hope it's just a slam dunk.
Yeah, I'm cautiously optimistic for what they're doing.
Talking about it, where I hope it's something more like Kingsman than it is like Jason Bourne, right? I hope it's something, or it could be a political thriller. I think political thriller would hit well these days, like a Manchurian Candidate type thing, or a Winter Soldier type.
Yeah, they would go more the route of Winter Soldier, where the politicalness is the backdrop, but you still have the MCU or Bondness in there.
Yes. But I do think we need to get back to the era of, oh, hey, I want to be James Bond. Like, it's an escapist thing.
It's fun.
It's not like, oh, hey, we're gonna watch this guy get tortured.
We spent 20 years watching someone get the shit kicked out of.
Yeah, and we're gonna watch Judi Dench get murdered and MI6 get exploded. Like, those were great moments, and if at the time that's what Bond needed.
Mm-hmm.
But I really think nowadays we need something a little bit more bright, colorful, sharp, maybe even a little bit sci-fi.
Yeah. MI6 exploded during in a Pierce Brosnan movie, too.
Oh, man. Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which one?
It's the one at the beginning where it's someone brings in like a suitcase full of money and it's got like explosive liquid on it. And Bond realizes it too late. He's like, no! And then, like, it just... But, yeah. So, do you guys have a favorite pre-Craig Bond movie and then a favorite Craig Bond movie?
Favorite, and I know this is really not a good movie. I probably should go back and watch it just to see if it really is as bad as everybody else says. But it would probably be Die Another Day.
Okay.
Again, I know it's a goofy movie.
Classic.
I know it's a goofy movie, but I thought it was just, like, the most over-the-top Bond movie. As far as the Brosnan era, you know, just the goofy, obviously the invisible car and like fancy watches and stuff, where it half felt like advertisements. The whole thing where Halle Berry was a great Bond girl.
Oh, yeah, she's great.
And
great
it was Bond. More, again, kind of because he said femme fatale, like she seemed like more of a good spy than just another person to.
They had some of the worst one-liners in that game. Or in that.
Oh, yeah, no, for sure.
In that movie.
The goofy villain that like didn't sleep, but like kind of slept.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I don't sleep, but I have this weird machine I just, you know, stand in for 5 hours. He had diamonds on his face and shit. The whole North Korea thing.
Yep.
Where his Bond's government betrayed him. I thought that was a cool little thing. And then the big plane scene at the end.
Those Brosnan movies were fun because I feel like at the age we were at too, they were just cool.
They were cool.
It was just fun.
Bond was cool.
You weren't trying to get Jason Bourne. You weren't going to watch a serious plot.
Yeah.
It was a superhero movie with a British spy. That's what it was.
Yeah.
It was a Marvel movie with a British spy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was just a fun one. It was just a fun version of that for me. It wasn't the most clever or well-written. It was just goofy and fun.
I respect that. Yeah. What's your favorite Craig movie?
Probably Skyfall. Casino Royale's up there, though. Those are both fucking excellent.
Yeah.
Cozy?
I think for me, my favorite pre-Craig is Diamonds Are Forever. I think that's the one I just watched the most as a kid.
Yeah.
But also just since Sean Connery's my favorite of the Bonds. What I loved about that one is it kind of encapsulated, you know, everything from Dr. No to that point of Sean Connery, just everything we loved about him and everything we loved about his villains and just the world that was built in there. I just love the theme song by Shirley Bassey. It's one of those movies where I think Sean Connery, he came back to play that, and you could see that he felt almost reinvigorated to come back to play the role. Some people think that, you know, he in the time in between, he was, you know, I think he had thoughts of either leaving the character or not, but I think when he came back here to this role in 71, you could really see him just have, you know, as we said, fun with it, and everything from Blofeld being the villain, and also like Bambi and Thumper to be that were in there as the femme fatales, even having just Diamonds being the MacGuffin and having just this whole thing of, you know, him having to go across country to get this particular set of diamonds, I just love that, and it just really, whenever I close my eyes, I just think of who James Bond is. Mm-hmm. It's Sean Connery.
That's your movie,
and it's in this role. So yeah, so that one will be my favorite pre-Craig Bond.
Got you. Yeah. What about Craig Bond?
My favorite Craig Bond, it kind of came down to what Juan was saying between Skyfall and Casino Royale. I go more to Casino Royale because just I think it Bond he just smashed onto the scene with his interpretation of Bond, and you know what Martin Campbell did with that movie, creating what this new era of Bond is, from the villains to just Bond getting hurt, almost dying, and having to again having to claw his way back on top, kind of like what we saw in the Pierce Brosnan ones, but in this case, you know, for a modern, it's put in a modern setting for a modern audience with modern sensibilities. I just love that Daniel Craig had this. He was rough. He was rough in that movie, mm-hmm. and it established that he's not the pretty boy. He's a different kind of Bond, and so I just love that. That's kind of what set the tone for all those. In that Daniel Craig era, so yeah, that'll be Casino Royale.
Nice, yeah. I don't think. I mean, mine is Spectre.
I love Spectre.
I don't think I know anyone who has named Solace as their top Craig.
Yeah,
it was Solace.
Nah. Yeah. The explosion at the end was probably the best part. That was about cool. That movie.
It was famously written during the writer's strike of 2008.
So, oh, was it?
Yeah. So a lot of things behind the scenes went into that movie, mm-hmm. kind of not feeling.
Yeah, gotcha. The villain was forgettable. It was mostly just going over the Eva Green plot line from the first movie.
Yeah.
It was a good idea, but they didn't really do anything much. Like, yeah, he's sad.
I don't think that was a bad idea to have a direct sequel to a Bond movie.
Of course not.
Yeah, it put too much pressure on, you know, being a sequel as opposed to just being its own thing.
Mm.
Yeah.
So, you know, you have to follow up the threads of the first one. You have to follow up the love story.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think it... I think it was one of the weaker ones of that era.
Yeah, same here.
So, yeah, what about you, Eric?
My favorite pre-Craig will probably have to be The Spy Who Loved Me.
Great choice.
It's It was like the first big budget Bond with a bunch of people. It had a bunch of tropes, like evil genius in the middle of the sea with a giant underwater.
Yeah, the volcano.
Yeah, it was great. But I'm just a big fan of the Moore era. Like, that's the one that my dad and I watched the most.
Mm. So, yeah, see, again, it's tricky to have, you know, the volcano, the lair in the volcano. Now that, you know, Austin Powers made fun of it too hard.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
It seems too stupid to have an actual human being decide to have a whole evil lair in a fucking volcano on a remote island. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, it was...
The logistics of that just don't make any sense.
It was great. But yeah, post-Craig, I think Spectre. I like Spectre a lot. So
okay. That Mexico City scene was great.
Dude, I love that Mexico City scene. That opening Mexico City. And like, it's amazing. I really like Spectre as an organization because they're in
throughout Connery.
They're throughout the whole series, and I've always thought Spectre was super, super cool. Just evil assassins. I mean, what's cooler as a kid? You're just a group of evil people who kill other people. But it's Bond, man.
Bond, man.
Bond, man.
That's
Bond.
It.
That's it.
I will say we are at a low point in terms of spy movies lately.
You're not getting a lot of them, yeah.
The last, honestly, it might be Winter Soldier, the last big political thriller. We've seen shit like Gray Man. But Gray Man was mediocre as hell.
Yeah, right. On Netflix. Wasn't like a big theatrical.
Which one?
Gray Man, the one with
Chris Evans.
Chris Evans and
Ryan Gosling.
Chris Evans is actually pretty good as a villain.
The Russo brothers. Yeah.
In that movie. Yeah. There was Argyle, which is a clear Bond ripoff.
Oh, man. And I love Sam Rockwell, too.
But that was one of the guys who made Kingsman.
It's a Kingsman adjacent. Well, Kingsman movie, really.
It's a Bond / Kingsman type movie, right? You have Henry Cavill in there looking very Bond-like. But, yeah, it just didn't... It wasn't as bad as people say. It had its charm. Mm-hmm. It had its goofy charm.
It just was disappointing. That's all.
And I felt like a well-made version of that would have been a good movie.
Yeah.
It just wasn't well-made.
That's what it was. I would have wanted to see whatever Argyle was make what the... Just do that. Don't step out.
The casting, the energy of it. The energy of it is fun. But this guy, it went a little too... Like the freaking... Ice skating on the oil
with the knives. With knife skating,
knife skating. Yeah, she literally sticks knives to her shoes and ice skating and
on oil
kills all the bad guys while doing that. It's it doesn't look very good. It looks very CGI-ish.
But you're right about the lull in spy thrillers or spy adjacent movies like this.
Kingsman bombed.
Yeah.
Was The Gentleman a spy?
No,
it was more of a crime.
No, it was a crime thriller.
Crime comedy.
Crime thriller comedy kind of thing. Yeah, that didn't have anything to do with spies.
Gotcha.
Guy Ritchie doesn't really make spy movies, does he?
No.
Oh, that's a Guy Ritchie thing?
Yeah.
Gotcha, okay.
No, so we'll see. I hope they do something good with it. It would be sad. I find that it was kind of funny that, like... You know, a franchise is an institution. It feels like an institution in our culture. Do you know what I mean? I gotta give them credit for the advertising for that because you know, I don't get that excited about random, even superheroes.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe Batman and Superman. But if you told me, oh hey, we have a new Iron Man, it's like, oh, I mean, what was cool about that was Robert Downey Jr. I don't give a shit about Iron Man.
That's
fair. You know what I mean?
That's fair.
Same with, Captain, it was the new Captain America. I like Chris Evans. I don't like Captain America.
In those cases, I think the actor was the biggest one, but something like a Batman or a James Bond, it's iconic.
Batman, a James Bond, a Superman, those are iconic enough where it feels sad if they can't at least do something with it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It feels sad if they just let it wither and die. Like, man, that's been around since the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
It's been around for 60 years, literally.
That's fair.
You know, it doesn't have to be the number one movie out there. Nobody thought Winter Soldier is an actual Oscar winner. But, you know, if you can't make at least a decent, you know, enjoyable spy thriller, that's a disappointment.
Yeah.
I agree.
So, okay. That is our retrospective on Bond movies.
Great stuff, Eric.
Bond series. Bro. Thank you very much for Eric with all the extensive knowledge and the...
I've been wanting to do this one for a minute.
We're bonding over Bond.
Big Bond fan. Yeah. Of course, the white dude is the big Bond fan.
Justin's actually another really big Bond fan, too.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
And he's not a white guy.
Yeah.
He's not, so we have non-white guy Bond fans.
Yeah, you see that guy?
Honestly, Kosey seems like a pretty big fan as well.
I'm also a huge fan of Bond.
It's mostly me just talking on my ass.
No, but I love you were able to come in and provide your perspective on the whole franchise one, so appreciate that.
Absolutely. We'll see. I hope they can manage to do something well with it.
Yeah, same.
I always root for quality projects as opposed to crap projects, right?
Yeah.
No need to be hateful on folks. But yeah, I think it's about that time for Plug of the Week. Plug it up.
Who wants to go first?
Eric, guest first as always.
I know we were kind of just talking about this, but common side effects.
Oh, damn it.
Oh, was that yours?
Yes.
Oh, no, you should have let me go first.
We have
sorry.
First. We have
no,
the
it's
first
okay.
stolen.
It's okay.
I think we can have a joint plug of the week.
No, it's okay. I'll find something else to plug.
It's a Mike Judge show, everything he does.
He just executive produced it, by the way. He didn't write.
Oh, really? Okay.
But he does act in it.
Yes, he does.
You will very much tell us that Hank Hill is the CEO.
Very different animation, but I'm digging it.
It's some Adult Swim as animation, but yeah, much it is, better actually. Than most Adult Swim shows.
That's a very good way of putting it.
The characters look like something from fucking Assy McGee or Venture Bros or some
yeah,
shit.
Yeah.
But the backgrounds, the way the shots are put together, it's really well done.
Yeah, it's hilarious when it wants to be. It's serious when it wants to be. It's intense when it wants to be. I'm loving this show.
The premise of the show is basically, what if the hippie dude that doesn't wear a shirt and smokes weed all the time that tells you that there's a magic mushroom in Peru
that cures everything.
That cures cancer.
Okay.
And
okay.
That, you know, Big Pharma is conspiring to keep them down so that they can keep all their money from getting people sick.
Yeah.
What if that was 100% true?
Mm-hmm.
And even, like, the freaking U.S. government was willing to kill people who fucked with that, you know, like, full-on conspiracy. It's a great premise and a great show. It's a heavy show. It's an Adult Swim. You think it's going to be a goofy, fun show, and it has goofy, fun moments, mm-hmm. Adult Swim-type moments, but it also has, like, oh, holy fuck, this...
Yeah.
Some guy just got their head blown off
in
the middle of a conversation-type moments. It feels scary real, too.
But yeah, no, that's... It's a... Worth mentioning.
Yes. All right, Kosi.
All right. No, so in this whole week, as I'm preparing for this Bond episode, I was going through Sean Connery's work, and a movie that he did...
Are you going to say The Rock?
No. A movie that he did...
The one with Catherine Zeta-Jones?
The what?
Was that the one with Catherine Zeta-Jones?
No, it's the one with him and Nick Cage.
Yeah, that's the one where they're on Alcatraz.
Yeah. So I was going through his work, and I realized I watched this movie years ago. It's called Excalibur. And it's a movie about Merlin and King Arthur. And I love the fact that in this movie, it kind of takes this whole approach to where, you know, what if we did, like, King Arthur? What if we did, like, the... Kind of like how they did a Robin Hood in 2010, but like a more gritty take on this King Arthur legend. It has a really great cast. So Helen Mirren's in it. Most famously, she's the most famous person I've seen in there. I watched it on YouTube because it's not really on any kind of streamer, but I caught it on YouTube. And Excalibur, if you guys can check it out. Again, it serves a little bit of a through line if you're interested in Arthurian legend and just all that. There's a lot of literature on that in general. Mm-hmm. And this movie kind of feels like what your teacher would kind of wheel out a TV and show y'all, like on a Tuesday afternoon, like, all right guys, we're not gonna read up on this, let's just watch Excalibur from 1981. And it's R-rated, it's awesome, and it's a fun movie, and it's heck my plug of the week.
So since Eric stole my fucking ass plug of the week, Eric stole my goddamn plug of the week.
You.
That I've been plugging to him all week, goddamn it.
But I'm
sorry,
listen,
man.
But the listeners know about.
Thank you for letting us.
But watch that show, y'all. It's ridiculous.
I also got to try it out and watch it. It's
way better than it has any right to be.
HBO?
It's Adult Swim. Adult Swim, really.
Adult Swim, but if you have the HBO Max app, you can catch just
But you don't. You can't episodes. Watch the most recent episode unless you're on Adult Swim.
Okay. Got to wait a little bit.
Yeah. No, it only comes out on HBO Max a week afterward, the fact. So my plug of the week, since I got my plug stolen, I'm going to take a different tack here. I'm going to plug a game not particularly recent. It's called Donkey Kong Tropical Freeze.
Okay.
It's a Donkey Kong game.
The viewers can't see, but I'm nodding my head in approval.
Part of the reason I'm plugging it is because Donkey Kong Country Returns recently came out. And
oh, really?
Both games are very similar. It's funny. Donkey Kong Country Returns was a Wii game. It was the first Donkey Kong Country game since the Super Nintendo. They remade it for the 3DS. Then on the Wii U, they made this game, Donkey Kong Tropical Freeze, which was basically a sequel to that, an expansion on that game. Added more characters, more challenges, took off some annoying parts of it. And then they rebrought Tropical Freeze for the Switch with some upgrades, including kind of an easy mode. They came out with that a couple years ago. And then this year, they released for the third time Donkey Kong Country Returns.
What?
Yes, it's very confusing. So they released... So those two games, Donkey Kong Country, the Returns and Tropical Freeze, again, very, very similar graphics, very similar gameplay, very similar mechanics... Right, you can tell they were both made similar times, and you know, one's a direct sequel to the other. But yes, A Country Returns came out second on Switch versus Tropical Freeze. Mm-hmm. Part of the reason for that is because, frankly, Tropical Freeze is the better game. Right? It's one of the, in my opinion, the best 2D platformer of all time.
Really?
I know that's bold. That's bold phrase.
It's a bold take.
I know Mario
games. Coming from you, I respect it, though.
I know Mario games, you know, have the fame. Obviously, you can't beat the nostalgia of a Super Mario World.
Because Mario 3 in particular.
Mario 3. Mm-hmm. Hard to beat the nostalgia of that, right? And even the old school Donkey Kong Country games. Very beloved. Donkey Kong Country 2 is an amazing game.
Yeah, like Kong Quest. Played any of those.
Diddy's Kong Quest. Yeah. Yes, not Diddy Kong's Quest. It's a cool little...
Although Diddy Kong Racing was
another one. But just something about Tropical Freeze, it just basically the pinnacle of the series.
Right.
It's brutally difficult. Like, unnecessarily, you will die over and over and over and over again.
It's challenging.
Okay. Even if you are good at video games. No matter how good you are and you think you are 2D platformers, this game will kick your ass.
Right.
It's beautiful. The graphics, the sound, some of the stages are very artistic. This is a 2D game, basically. They can do whatever they want with the background. Mm-hmm. So they make it, you know, they put this beautiful, lush jungle themes throughout it all. Bosses are actually surprisingly difficult, especially for a 2D platformer. They're long, too. Like,
would you say it's one of the harder 2D platformers?
I mean, I'd say it's the hardest. I mean, at least that I've played.
Yeah.
Maybe Super Meat Boy. Super Meat Boy might be harder. Oh,
man, that's old school,
man. And, yeah. that one Lion King game on Super Nintendo.
Yeah, but those... No, that, old
that's
school.
Just bad game design.
Yeah, that's just a bad game. No, that's not difficult. That's just, I mean, it is difficult, but that's just a bad game. Okay, this is difficult in the sense that you have to be precise. Okay. They'll ask you to jump like perfectly in four enemies in a row, and they're all flawlessly placed where if you just play well, you'll do it, right? But you still have to like flawlessly press it continuously over the top. And they'll have special levels where, you know, it's like a 3-minute long non-stop difficult jumps, and if you mess up, you have to restart the whole level. Mm-hmm. Brutal game, but so fun. If you like challenging games, you like beautiful games, you like 2D platformers, get this game.
Damn.
So yeah, no, that's my recommendation.
Dude, good plug.
My plug of the week.
Tropical Freeze, Donkey Kong.
Now that somebody stole my real plug of the week.
Donkey Kong, what a jerk.
Tropical Freeze. All right, thanks, Juan, for that plug of the week. Thanks, Juan. Dude. Thanks, Eric.
Absolutely, man.
Thanks for being here as always.
This bumps around.
This is always fun.
Yeah, this is always fun. A fun time. This is great, and I want to thank you, Eric. Thank you, Juan, and of course, thank you, listeners. Yeah, guys. Seriously, guys. Thank you all for listening in. Again, you guys can subscribe to us on Spotify under It Was Mooney. You can also find us on all social media platforms. You can also find us on Apple Podcasts, which is a great one. Again, you can also find long form of our podcast on YouTube, so you can go there and find us. We're also lurking on Reddit, so find us there and talk to us. But again, you've been joined always by Cosi, and I'm joined again by Juan and Eric. And so next time, guys, peace,
man, adios.
Nice.